I can come back. Lyssa hastily stood up. No, she said, voice cool and princess-like. Rose and I have to go anyway. Yeah, I agreed, following her lead. We have stuff to do, and we don't want to interrupt your... Hell, I had no idea what they were going to do. Wasn't sure I wanted to. Mia had found her voice. Christian wanted to see some of the moves I've been practicing with the campus guardians. Cool. I kept the smile on my face as Lyssa and I moved toward the door. She stepped as far around Christian as she could. Jill will be jealous. And not just Jill. After another round of goodbyes, Lyssa and I left and set back off across the grounds. I could feel the anger and jealousy radiating through her bond. It's only their fight club, Lyss, I said, having no need for her side of the conversation. Nothing's going on. They're going to talk punches and kicking and other boring stuff. Well, actually that stuff was pretty sweet, but I wasn't about to glorify Christian and Mia hanging out. Maybe now nothing's going on, she growled, staring stonily ahead. But who knows what could happen? They spend time together, practice some physical moves, one thing leads to another. That's ridiculous, I said. That kind of stuff isn't romantic at all. Another lie, seeing as that was exactly how my relationship with Dimitri had begun. Again, best not to mention that. Besides, Christian can't be involved with every girl he hangs out with. Mia, Jill, no offense, but he's not really that much of a ladies' man. He's really good looking, she argued, those dark feelings still seething within her. Yeah, I conceded, keeping my eyes carefully on the pathway. But it takes more than that. And besides, I thought you didn't care what he did. I don't, she agreed, not even convincing herself, let alone me. Not at all. My attempts to distract her proved pretty useless for the rest of the day. Tasha's words came back to me. Why haven't you fixed this? Because Lyssa and Christian were being too damned unreasonable, both caught up in their own pissed-off feelings, which were kind of pissing me off in return. Christian would have been pretty helpful in my illicit escapades, but I had to keep my distance for Lyssa's sake. I finally left her to her bad mood when dinner came around. Compared to her romantic situation, my relationship with a semi-spoiled royal playboy from a disapproving family seemed downright optimistic. What a sad and scary world this was becoming. I assured Lyssa I'd head straight back after dinner and that we'd go see Mia together. The mention of Mia didn't make Lyssa happy, but the thought of a potential break-in did distract her momentarily from Christian. The dress I had for dinner was maroon, made of light, gauzy material that was great for summer weather. The neckline was decent, and little cap sleeves gave it a classy edge. With my hair in a low ponytail that did a decent job of hiding the healing tattoo, I almost looked like a respectable girlfriend, which only went to show how deceptive appearances were, seeing as I was part of a crazy scheme to bring my last boyfriend back from the dead. Adrian surveyed me from head to toe when I arrived at his parents' townhouse. They kept a permanent residence here at the court. The small smile on his face told me he liked what he saw. You approve? I asked, spinning around. He slipped an arm around my waist.
Unfortunately, yes. I was hoping you'd show up in something a lot sluttier. Something that would scandalize my parents.
Sometimes it's like you don't even care about me as a person, I observed as we walked inside. It's like you're just using me for shock value.
It's both, little Dompia. I care about you, and I'm using you for shock value.
I hid a smile as the Ivashkov's housekeeper led us toward the dining room. The court actually had restaurants and cafes tucked away within its buildings, but royals like Adrian's parents would consider it classier to have a fancy dinner in their home. Me, I would have preferred being out in public. More escape options.
You must be Rose.
My assessment of the exits was interrupted when a very tall, very elegant Maroi woman came into the room. She wore a long, dark green satin dress that immediately made me feel out of place and that perfectly matched the color of her and Adrian's eyes. Her dark hair was pulled into a bun, and she smiled down at me with genuine warmth as she took my hand.
I'm Daniela Ivozhkov,
she said. It's very nice to meet you at last.
Was it really?
My hand automatically shook hers in return.
Nice to meet you too, Lady Avajkov.
Call me Daniela, please.
She turned to Adrian and tisked as she straightened the collar of his button-up shirt.
Honestly, darling, she said, do you even look in a mirror before you walk out the door? Your hair's a mess.
He dodged her as she reached toward his head.
Are you kidding? I spent hours in front of the mirror to make it look this way.
She gave a tormented sigh.
Some days I can't decide if I'm lucky or not to have no other children.
Behind her, quiet servants were setting food out on the table. Steam rose up from the platters, and my stomach rumbled. I hoped no one else heard. Daniela glanced off down the hall beyond her.
Nathan, will you hurry up? The food's getting cold.
A few moments later, heavy footsteps sounded on the ornate wood floor, and Nathan Avajkov swept into the room. Like his wife, he was dressed formally, the blue satin of his tie gleaming next to the starkness of his heavy black suit coat. I was glad they had air conditioning in here, or he'd have been melting in that heavy fabric. The feature on him that stood out the most was what I remembered from before, a distinctly silver head of hair and mustache. I wondered if Adrian's hair would look like that when he was older. Nah, I'd never find out. Adrian would probably dye his hair at the first sign of gray or silver. Adrian's father might be exactly as I remembered, but it was clear he had no clue who I was. In fact, he seemed genuinely startled to see me.
This is Adrian's, friend, Rose Hathaway, said Daniela gently. You remember, he said he'd bring her tonight.
It's nice to meet you, Lord Avajkov.
Unlike his wife, he didn't offer to put us on a first-name basis, which relieved me a little. The Strigoi who had forcefully turned Dimitri had been named Nathan, too, and it wasn't a name I wanted to speak aloud. Adrian's father looked me over, but it wasn't with the appreciation Adrian had shown earlier. It was more like I was an oddity.
Oh, the Dompierre girl.
He wasn't rude exactly, just disinterested. I mean, it wasn't like he called me a blood whore or anything. We all sat down to eat, and although Adrian kept his typical devil-may-care smile on his face, I again got the vibe that he really, really wanted a cigarette. Probably hard liquor, too. Being around his parents was not something he enjoyed. When one of the servants poured us all wine, Adrian looked immensely relieved and didn't hold back. I shot him a cautioning look that he ignored. Nathan managed to rapidly devour his balsamic-glazed pork medallions while still looking elegant and proper.
So,
he said, attention focused on Adrian.
Now that Vasilisa's graduated, what are you going to do with yourself? You aren't going to keep slumming with high school students, are you? There's no point in you being there anymore.
I don't know, said Adrian lazily.
He shook his head, further tousling his carefully mussed hair.
I kind of like hanging out with them. They think I'm funnier than I really am.
Unsurprising, his father replied. You aren't funny at all. It's time you do something productive. If you aren't going to go back to college, you should at least start sitting in on some of the family business meetings. Tatiana spoils you, but you could learn a lot from Rufus.
I knew enough about royal politics to recognize the name. The oldest member of each family was usually its prince or princess and held a royal council position and was eligible to become king or queen. When Tatiana had taken the crown, Rufus had become prince of the Avajkov family since he was the next oldest.
True, said Adrian deadpan. He wasn't eating so much as pushing his food around.
I'd really like to know how he keeps his two mistresses a secret from his wife.
Adrian,
snapped Daniela, a flush spilling over her pale cheeks.
Don't say things like that at our dinner table, and certainly not in front of a guest.
Nathan seemed to notice me again and gave a dismissive shrug.
She doesn't matter.
I bit my lip on that, repressing the urge to see if I could throw my china plate frisbee style and hit him in the head. I decided against it. Not only would it ruin dinner, but the plate probably wouldn't get the lift I needed. Nathan turned his scowl back to Adrian.
But you do. I'm not going to have you sitting around doing nothing and using our money to fund it.
Something told me I should stay out of this, but I couldn't stand to see Adrian dressed down by his annoying father. Adrian did sit around and waste money, but Nathan didn't have the right to make fun of him for it. I mean, sure, I did all the time, but that was different. Maybe you could go to Lehi with Lyssa, I offered. Keep studying Spear with her, and then do whatever else you were doing the last time you were in college.
Drinking and skipping classes, said Nathan.
Art, said Daniela. Adrian took art classes.
Really? I asked, turning to him in surprise. Somehow, I could imagine him as an artistic type. It fit his erratic personality.
Then this would be perfect. You could pick it up again.
He shrugged and finished his second glass of wine.
I don't know. This college would probably have the same problem the last one did.
I frowned. What's that?
Homework. Adrian? Growled his father. It's okay, said Adrian breezily.
He rested his arm casually on the table.
I don't really need a job or extra money. After Rose and I get married, the kids and I'll just live off of her guardian paycheck.
We all froze, even me. I knew perfectly well that he was joking. I mean, even if he harbored fantasies of marriage and kids, and I was pretty sure he didn't, the meager salary a guardian made would never be enough to keep him in the luxurious life he required. Adrian's father, however, clearly did not think he was joking. Daniela seemed undecided. Me? I was just uncomfortable. It was a very, very bad topic to bring up at a dinner like this, and I couldn't believe Adrian had gone there. I didn't even think the wine was to blame. Adrian just liked tormenting his father that much. The awful silence grew thicker and thicker. My gut instinct to fill conversation voids was raging, but something told me to stay quiet. The tension increased. When the doorbell rang, all four of us nearly jumped out of our chairs. The housekeeper, Tori, scurried off to answer it, and I breathed a mental sigh of relief. An unexpected visitor would help ease the tension. Or maybe not. Tori cleared her throat when she returned, clearly flustered as she looked from Daniela to Nathan.
Her Royal Majesty, Queen Tatiana, is here.
No way.
All three of Ozhkov's stood up abruptly, and a half second later, I joined them. I hadn't believed Adrian earlier when he said Tatiana might come. From his face, he seemed pretty surprised now, too. But sure enough, there she was. She swept into the room, elegant in what must have been business casual for her. Tailored black slacks and jacket with a red silk and lace blouse underneath. Little jeweled barrettes gleamed in her dark hair, and those imperious eyes peered down at us all as we offered hasty bows. Even her own family followed formalities.
Aunt Tatiana,
said Nathan, forcing what looked like a smile onto his face. I don't think he did it very often.
Won't you join us for dinner?
She waved a hand dismissively.
No, no, I can't stay. I'm on my way to meet with Priscilla, but thought I'd stop by when I heard Adrian had returned.
Her gaze fell on him.
I can't believe you've been here all day and didn't come visit.
Her voice was cool, but I swear there was an amused twinkle in her eyes. It was scary. She wasn't someone I thought of as warm and fuzzy. The whole experience of seeing her outside of one of her ceremonial rooms was totally unreal. Adrian grinned at her. He was clearly the most comfortable person in the room right now. For reasons I never understood, Tatiana loved and spoiled Adrian. That wasn't to say that she didn't love her other family members. It was just clear that he was her favorite. It had always surprised me, considering what a scoundrel he was sometimes.
Oh, I figured you had more important things to do than see me,
he told her.
Besides, I quit smoking, so now we won't be able to go sneak cigarettes out behind the throne room together. Adrian!
Chastised Nathan, turning bright red. It occurred to me then that I could have based a drinking game around how many times he exclaimed his son's name disapprovingly.
Auntie, I'm so...
Tatiana held up a hand again.
Oh, be silent, Nathan. No one wants to hear it.
I almost choked. Being in the same room with the queen was horrid, but it was almost worth it to see her verbally bitch-slap Lord of Oshkov. She turned back to Adrian, face thawing.
You finally quit? It's about time. I suppose this is your doing.
It took me a moment to realize she was speaking to me. Until that point, I'd kind of hoped she might not have even noticed me. It seemed the only explanation for her not screaming at them to remove the rebellious little blood whore. It was shocking. Her voice wasn't accusatory either. It was impressed.
Oh, well, it wasn't me, Your Majesty, I said. My meekness was a far cry from my behavior at our last meeting. Adrian was the one who had the, determination to do it.
So help me, Tatiana chuckled.
Very diplomatic. They should assign you to a politician.
Nathan didn't like the attention on me. I wasn't sure I did either, semi-pleasant or not.
Are you and Priscilla doing business tonight, or just having a friendly dinner?
Tatiana dragged her gaze from me.
Both. There's been some interfamily squabbling going on. Not publicly, but it's getting out. People are making noise about security. Some are ready to start training up right now. Others are wondering if guardians can go without sleep.
She rolled her eyes. And those are the tamest of the suggestions. No question about it. This visit had gotten a lot more interesting.
I hope you're going to shut those would-be militants up, growled Nathan. Us fighting alongside guardians is absurd.
What's absurd, said Tatiana, is having strife among the royal classes. That's what I want to shut up.
Her tone grew lofty, very queen-like.
We are the leaders among the Moroi. We have to set an example. We need to be unified to survive.
I studied her curiously. What did that mean? She hadn't agreed or disagreed with Nathan's stance on Moroi fighting. She'd only mentioned establishing peace among her people. But how? Was her method to encourage the new motion or squash it? Security was a huge concern for everyone after the attack, and it fell on her to figure it out.
Sounds pretty hard to me, said Adrian, playing oblivious to the seriousness of the matter. If you still want a cigarette afterward, I'll make an exception.
I'll settle for you coming to make a proper visit tomorrow, she said dryly. Leave the cigarettes at home.
She glanced at his empty wine glass. And other things. A flash of steely resolve crossed her gaze, and even though it melted as quickly as it had come, I felt almost relieved. There was the icy Tatiana I knew. He saluted.
Noted.
Tatiana gave the rest of us brief glances.
Have a good evening,
was her only farewell. We bowed again, and then she headed back toward the front door. As she did, I heard scuffling and murmured voices. She'd been traveling with a retinue, I realized, and had left them all in the foyer while she came to say hello to Adrian. Dinner was quiet after that. Tatiana's visit had kind of left us all astonished. At least it meant I didn't have to hear Adrian and his father bicker anymore. Daniela mostly maintained what little conversation there was, attempting to inquire about my interests. And I realized she hadn't said a word during Tatiana's brief visit. Daniela had married into the Avajkovs, and I wondered if she found the queen intimidating. When the time came for us to leave, Daniela was all smiles while Nathan retired to his study.
You need to come by more often, she told Adrian,
smoothing his hair in spite of his protests.
And you're welcome anytime, Rose.
Thank you, I said, dumbfounded. I kept studying her face to see if she was lying, but I didn't think she was. It made no sense. Moroi didn't approve of long-term relationships with Dampierres. Royal Moroi especially didn't. And Royal Moroi related to the queen especially didn't, at least if past experience was any indication. Adrian sighed.
Maybe if he's not around.
Oh, damn. That reminds me. I left my coat here last time. I wanted to get out too fast.
You've got like 50 coats, I remarked. Ask Tori, said Daniela. She'll know where it is.
Adrian went off to find the housekeeper, leaving me with his mother. I should have made polite, inconsequential small talk, but my curiosity was getting the better of me.
Dinner was really great,
I told her honestly. And I hope you won't take this the wrong way. But, I mean, well, you seem okay with Adrian and me dating. She nodded serenely.
I am.
And, well, it had to be said. Queen Tatiana kind of seemed okay with it, too.
She is.
I made sure my jaw didn't drop to the floor. But, I mean, the last time I talked to her, she was really mad. She kept telling me over and over how she'd never allow us to be together in the future or get married or anything like that. I cringed, recalling Adrian's joke. I figured you'd feel the same. Lord Ivashkov does. You can't really want your son to be with a Dompierre forever. Daniela's smile was kind but wry.
Do you plan on being with him forever? Do you plan on marrying him and settling down?
The question totally caught me off guard. No offense to Adrian, I just never...
Planned on settling down at all?
She nodded wisely.
That's what I thought. Believe me, I know Adrian wasn't serious earlier. Everyone's jumping to conclusions that haven't even happened. I've heard of you, Rose. Everyone has. And I admire you. And based on what I've learned, I'm guessing you aren't the type who would quit being a guardian to be a housewife.
You're right, I admitted.
Then I don't see the problem. You're both young. You're entitled to have fun and do what you want now, but you and I, know that even if you see Adrian off and on for the rest of your life, you aren't going to get married or settle down. And it has nothing to do with what Nathan or anyone says. It's the way of the world. It's the kind of person you are. I can see it in your eyes. Tatiana's realized it too, and that's why she eased up. You need to be out there fighting, and that's what you'll do. At least if you truly intend to be a guardian.
I do. I was staring at her in wonder. Her attitude was amazing. She was the first royal I'd met who hadn't immediately freaked out and gone crazy over the idea of a Moroi and Dompierre match. If other people shared her view, it would make a lot of other lives easier. And she was right. It didn't matter what Nathan thought. It wouldn't have even mattered if Dimitri had been around. The bottom line was that Adrian and I wouldn't be together for the rest of our lives because I'd always be on guardian duty, not lounging around like he did. Realizing that freed things up, yet it made me a little sad, too. Behind her, I could see Adrian approaching down the hall. Daniela leaned forward, pitching her voice low for me. There was a wistful note to her words when she spoke, the tone of a concerned mother. But Rose, while I'm fine with you two dating and being happy, please try not to break his heart too much when the time comes.
Chapter 4.
I decided it'd be best to not mention my conversation with Adrian's mother to him. I didn't need psychic powers to sense his mixed moods as we walked back to guest housing. His father had annoyed him, but his mother's seeming acceptance had cheered him up. I didn't want to damage that by letting Adrian know she was only okay with our dating because she figured it was a temporary fun thing.
"So you're going off with Lissa?"
he asked when we reached my room. "Yep, sorry. You know, girl stuff." And by girl stuff, I meant breaking and entering. Adrian seemed a little disappointed, but I knew he didn't begrudge our friendship. He gave me a small smile and wrapped his arms around my waist, leaning down to kiss me. Our lips met, and that warmth that always surprised me spread through me. After a few sweet moments, we broke apart, but the look in his eyes said it wasn't easy for him. "See you later," I said. He gave me one more quick kiss, and then headed off to his own room. I immediately sought out Lissa, who was hanging out in her own room. She was staring intently at a silver spoon, and through our bond, I could sense her intent. She was attempting to infuse it with spirit's compulsion, so that whoever held it would cheer up. I wondered if she intended it for herself, or was just randomly experimenting. I didn't probe her mind to find out.
"A spoon?" I asked with amusement.
She shrugged and set it down. "Hey, it's not easy to keep getting a hold of silver. I have to take what I can get."
"Well, it'd make for happy dinner parties."
She smiled and put her feet upon the ebony coffee table that sat in the middle of her little suite's living room,
Each time I saw it, I couldn't help but be reminded of the glossy black furniture that had been in my own prison suite back in Russia. I had fought Dmitri with a stake made from a chair's leg of similar style.
Speaking of which, how was your dinner party?
Not as bad as I thought, I admitted. I never realized what an asshole Adrian's dad was, though. His mom was actually pretty cool. She didn't have a problem with us dating.
Yeah, I've met her. She is nice, though I never thought she was nice enough to be okay with scandalous dating. I don't suppose Her Royal Majesty showed up.
Lissa was joking, so my response floored her.
She did, and it wasn't awful.
What? Did you say wasn't?
I know. It was so crazy. It was this really quick visit to see Adrian, and she acted like me being there was no big deal.
I didn't bother delving into the politics of Tatiana's views on Maroi training for battle. Of course, who knows what would have happened if she stayed. Maybe she would have turned into her old self. I would have needed a whole set of magic silverware then to stop me from pulling a knife on her.
Lissa groaned. Rose, you cannot make those kinds of jokes.
I grinned.
I say the things you're too afraid to.
This made her smile in return.
It's been a long time since I've heard that,
she said softly. My trip to Russia had fractured our friendship, which had ended up showing me just how much it really meant to me. We spent the rest of the time hanging out, talking about Adrian and other gossip. I was relieved to see she'd gotten over her earlier mood about Christian, but as the day progressed, her anxiety grew about our pending mission with Mia.
It's going to be okay, I told her when the time came.
We were heading back across the court grounds, dressed in comfortable jeans and t-shirts. It was nice to be free of school curfew, but again, being out in the bright sunlight didn't make me feel very covert. This'll be easy. Lissa cut me a look, but said nothing. The Guardians were the security force in our world, and this was their headquarters. Breaking in was going to be anything but easy. Mia looked determined when we reached her, though, and I felt encouraged by her attitude. And that she was wearing all black. True, it wouldn't do much in sunlight, but it made this all feel more legitimate. I was dying to know what had happened with Christian, and Lissa was too. Again, it was one of those topics best left unexplained. Mia did, however, explain her plan to us, and I honestly felt it had about a 65% chance of working. Lissa was uneasy about her role since it involved compulsion, but she was a trooper and agreed to do it. We went over everything in detail a few more times and then set out to the building that housed Guardian operations. I'd been there once before, when Dmitri had taken me to see Victor in the holding cells adjacent to the Guardian's HQ. I'd never spent much time in the main offices before, and as Mia had predicted, they were lightly staffed this time of the day. When we walked in, we were immediately met by a reception area that you'd find in any other administrative office. A stern guardian sat at a desk with a computer, filing cabinets and tables all around him. He probably didn't have much to do at this time of night, but he was still clearly on high alert. Beyond him was a door, and it held my attention. Mia had explained that it was a gateway to all the guardians' secrets, to their records and main offices, and surveillance areas that monitored high-risk regions of the court. Stern or not, the guy had a small smile for Mia.
Isn't it a little late for you? You aren't here for lessons, are you?
She grinned back. He must have been one of the guardians she'd grown friendly with during her time at court.
Nah, just up with some friends and wanted to show them around.
He arched an eyebrow as he took in me and Lissa. He gave a slight nod of acknowledgement.
Princess Dragomir? Guardian Hathaway?
Apparently our reputations preceded us. It was the first time I'd been addressed by my new title. It startled me. It made me feel slightly guilty about betraying the group I'd just become a member of.
This is Dawn, explained Mia. Dawn, the princess has a favor to ask.
She looked meaningfully at Lissa. Lissa took a deep breath, and I felt the burning of compulsion magic through our bond as she focused her gaze upon him.
Dawn, she said firmly, give us the keys and codes to the records archives downstairs. And then make sure the cameras in those areas are turned off.
He frowned.
Why would I?
But as her eyes continued to hold his, I could see the compulsion seize him. The lines on his face smoothed into compliance, and I breathed a sigh of relief. Plenty of people were strong enough to resist compulsion, particularly that of ordinary Moroi. Lissa's was much stronger because of spirit, though you never knew if someone might break through.
"Of course,"
he said, standing up. He opened a desk drawer and handed Mia a set of keys that she promptly gave to me.
"The code is 4312578.
I committed it to memory, and he beckoned us through the all-powerful door. Beyond it, corridors spread in all directions. He pointed to one on our right.
"Down there. Take a left at the end, go downstairs 2 flights, and it's the door on the right."
Mia glanced at me to make sure I understood. I nodded, and she turned back to him.
"Now make sure the surveillance is off." "Take us there," said Lissa firmly.
Dawn couldn't resist her command, and she and Mia followed him, leaving me on my own. This part of the plan was all on me, and I hurried down the hall. The facility might be lightly staffed, but I could still run into someone, and would have no compulsion to help me talk my way out of trouble. Dawn's directions were spot on, but I still wasn't prepared when I punched in the code and entered the vault. Rows and rows of filing cabinets stretched down a huge hall. I couldn't see the end of it. Drawers were stacked 5 high, and the faint fluorescent lighting and eerie silence gave it all a spooky, almost haunted feel. All the Guardian's information from before the digital age. God only knew how far back these records went. To medieval days in Europe? I suddenly felt daunted and wondered if I could pull this off. I walked to the first cabinet on my left, relieved to see it was labeled AA1, it read. Below it was AA2, and so forth. Oh, dear. It was going to take me several cabinets to even get out of the A's. I was grateful the organization was as simple as alphabetical order, but I now understood why these cabinets went on forever. I had to go back more than 3/4 of the way down the room to get to the T's, and it wasn't until I got to the TA-27 drawer that I found the file for Tarasov Prison. I gasped. The file was thick, filled with all sorts of documents. There are pages on the prison's history and its migration patterns, as well as floor plans for each of its locations. I could hardly believe it. So much information. But what did I need? What would be useful? The answer came quickly. All of it. I shut the drawer and tucked the folder under my arm. Okay, time to get out of here. I turned around and began heading for the exit at a light jog. Now that I had what I needed, the urgency of escape was pressing on me. I was almost there when I heard a soft click and the door opened. I froze as a Dampier I didn't recognize stepped through. He froze as well, clearly astonished, and I took it as a small blessing that he didn't immediately pin me against the wall and start interrogating me.
"You're Rose Hathaway," he said.
Good Lord. Was there anyone who didn't know who I was? I tensed, unsure what to expect now, but spoke as though us meeting here made perfect sense. "So it would seem. Who are you?"
"Mikhail Tanner," he said, still puzzled. "What are you doing here?"
"Running an errand," I said breezily. I indicated the file. "The guardian on duty down here needed something."
"You're lying," he said. "I'm the guardian on archive duty. If someone needed something, they would have sent me."
Oh, shit. Talk about best laid plans failing. Yet as I stood there, a strange thought came to me. His appearance wasn't familiar at all. Curly brown hair, average height, late 20s. Pretty good looking, really. But his name, something about his name.
"Miss Karp," I gasped. "You're the one. You were involved with Miss Karp."
He stiffened, blue eyes narrowing warily.
"What do you know about that?"
I swallowed. What I'd done, or tried to do for Dimitri, wasn't without precedent.
"You loved her. You went out to kill her after she turned.
Miss Karp had been a teacher of ours a few years ago. She'd been a spirit user, and as the effects of it began to drive her insane, she'd done the only thing she could to save her mind, become a Strigoi. Mikhail, her lover, had done the only thing he'd known to end that evil state. Search for and kill her. It occurred to me that I was standing face to face with the hero of a love story nearly as dramatic as my own. But you never found her, I said softly. Did you? He took a long time in answering, his eyes weighing me heavily. I wondered what he was thinking about. Her? His own pain? Or was he analyzing me?
No, he said finally. I had to stop. The Guardians needed me more.
He spoke in that calm, controlled way that Guardians excelled at. But in his eyes, I saw grief. A grief I more than understood. I hesitated before taking a shot at the only chance I had to not get busted and end up in a jail cell. I know. I know you have every reason to drag me out of here and turn me in. You should. It's what you're supposed to do. What I'd do, too. But the thing is, this. I again nodded at the folder. Well, I'm kind of trying to do what you did. I'm trying to save someone. He remained quiet. He could probably guess who I meant and assumed save meant kill. If he knew who I was, he'd know who my mentor had been. Few knew about my romantic relationship with Dimitri, but me caring about him would have been a foregone conclusion.
It's futile, you know,
Mikhail said at last. This time his voice cracked a little.
I tried. I tried so hard to find her. But when they disappear, when they don't want to be found...
He shook his head.
There's nothing we can do. I understand why you want to do it. Believe me, I do. But it's impossible. You'll never find him if he doesn't want you to.
I wondered how much I could tell Mikhail. How much I should. It occurred to me then that if there was anyone else in this world who understood what I was going through, it would be this man. Besides, I didn't have a lot of options here. The thing is, I think I can find him, I said slowly. He's looking for me.
What?
Mikhail's eyebrows rose.
How do you know?
Because he, sends me letters about it. That fierce warrior look immediately returned.
If you know this, if you can find him, you should get back up to kill him.
I flinched at those last words and again feared what I had to say next. Would you believe me if I said there was a way to save him?
You mean by destroying him?
I shook my head. No, I mean really save. A way to restore him to his original state.
No,
Mikhail said swiftly.
That's impossible.
It might not be. I know someone who did it, who turned a Strigoi back. Okay, that was a small lie. I didn't actually know the person, but I wasn't going to get into the string of knowing someone who knew someone.
That's impossible, Mikhail repeated. Strigoi are dead. Undead. Same difference.
What if there was a chance? I said. What if it could be done? What if Ms. Karp, if Sonya, could become Roy again? What if you could be together again?
It also means she'd be crazy again, but that was a technicality for later.
It felt like an eternity before he answered, and my anxiety grew. Lissa couldn't compel forever, and I told Mia I would be fast. This plan would fall apart if I didn't get out soon. Yet watching him deliberate, I could see his mask falter. After all this time, he still loved his Sonya.
If what you're saying is true, and I don't believe it, then I'm coming with you. Whoa, no, not in the plan.
You can't, I said swiftly. I've already got people in place. Another small lie. Adding more might ruin things. I'm not doing it alone, I said, cutting off what I figured would be his next argument. If you really want to help me, really want to take a chance on bringing her back, you need to let me go.
There's no way it can be true,
he repeated, but there was doubt in his voice, and I played on it. Can you take that chance? More silence. I was starting to sweat now. Mikhail closed his eyes for a moment and took a deep breath. Then he stepped aside and gestured to the door.
Go.
I nearly sagged in relief and immediately grabbed the door handle. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I could get in a lot of trouble for this,
he said wearily.
And I still don't believe it's possible.
But you hope it is. I didn't need a response from him to know I was right. I opened the door, but before going through, I paused and glanced at him. This time, he no longer hid the grief and pain in his face. If you mean it, if you want to help, there might be a way you can. Another piece of the puzzle had unraveled itself for me. Another way we might pull this off. I explained what I needed from him and was surprised at how quickly he agreed. He really was like me, I realized. We both knew the idea of bringing back Strigoi was impossible, and yet we so wanted to believe it could be done. I slipped back upstairs alone after that. Don wasn't at his desk, and I wondered what Mia had done with him. I didn't wait to find out, and instead headed outside, off to a small courtyard that we'd established as our rendezvous point. Mia and Lyssa were both waiting there, pacing. No longer distracted with anxiety, I opened myself to the bond and felt Lyssa's agitation.
Thank God, she said when she saw me. We thought you'd been caught.
Well, it's a long story. One I didn't bother with. I got what I needed, and I actually got a whole lot more. I think we can do this. Mia gave me a look that was both wry and wistful. I sure do wish I knew what you guys were doing. I shook my head as the three of us walked away. No, I replied. I'm not sure that you do.
Chapter 5 Lyssa and I stayed up late when we returned to her room, poring over the documents. She was a jumble of feelings when I told her about my encounter with Mikhail, which I hadn't mentioned to Mia. Lyssa's initial reaction was surprise, but there were other things too. Fear over the trouble I could have gotten into. A bit of warm romanticism over what both Mikhail and I were willing to do for those we loved. Wonder if she would do the same if Christian were in that situation. She decided instantly that she would. Her love for him was still that strong. Then she told herself that she actually didn't care about him anymore, which I would have found annoying if I wasn't so distracted. What's wrong? She asked. I'd sighed aloud in dismay without realizing it while I read her thoughts. Not wanting her to know I'd been perusing her mind, I pointed at the papers spread out on her bed. Just trying to make sense of this. Not entirely that far off from the truth. The prison's layout was complex. The cells occupied two floors and were tiny, only one prisoner per cell. The papers didn't explain why, but the reason was obvious. It went along with what Abe had said about keeping criminals from turning Strigoi. If I'd been locked away in prison for years, I could understand the temptation of cracking and killing my roommate to become Strigoi and escape. The cells were also kept housed in the very center of the building, surrounded by guards, offices, exercise rooms, a kitchen, and a feeder's room. The documents explained guard rotations, as well as prisoner feeding schedules. They were apparently escorted to the feeders one at a time, heavily guarded, and only allowed very short spurts of blood. Again, everything kept the prisoners weak and prevented them from turning Strigoi. It was all good information, but I had no reason to believe any of it was up to date, since the file was 5 years old. It was also likely the prison had all sorts of new surveillance equipment in place. Probably the only things we could count on being the same were the prison's location and the building's layout. How good are you feeling about your charm-making skills? I asked Lyssa. Although she hadn't been able to put as much spirit healing into my ring as a woman I knew named Oksana could, I had noticed my darkness-induced temper soothed a little. Lyssa'd made a ring for Adrian, too, though I couldn't say for sure if it was what was helping him control his vices lately. Vices he usually indulged in to control spirit. She shrugged and rolled over onto her back. Exhaustion filled her, but she was trying to stay awake for my sake.
Getting better. Wish I could meet Oksana.
Maybe someday, I said vaguely. I didn't think Oksana would ever leave Siberia. She'd run off with her guardian and wanted to keep a low profile. Besides, I didn't want Lyssa over there anytime soon after my ordeals. Have you been able to put in anything besides healing? A moment later, I answered my own question. Oh, right, the spoon. Lissa grimaced, but it turned into a yawn.
I don't think it works so well.
Hmm? I glanced back at the blueprints. I'm thinking if you could make a few more compulsion charms, it would go a long way to help with this. We need to make people see what we want them to see. Surely if Victor, whose powers of compulsion were nowhere near hers, had managed a lust charm, she could do what I needed. She just needed more practice. She understood the basic principles, but had trouble making her desired effects last. The only problem was that in asking her to do this, I was making her use more spirit. Even if the side effects didn't show up right away, they would likely come back to haunt her in the future. She glanced at me curiously, but when I saw her yawn again, I told her not to worry about it. I'd explain tomorrow. She offered no argument, and after a quick hug, we each retired to our own beds. We weren't going to get much sleep, but we had to get what we could. Tomorrow was a big day. I'd worn a variation of the Guardian's formal black and white outfit when I went to Victor's trial. In normal bodyguard situations, we wore ordinary clothes. But for fancy events, they wanted us looking crisp and professional. The morning after our daring break-in, I got my first true taste of Guardian fashion. I'd worn hand-me-down clothes at Victor's trial, but now had an official Guardian outfit, tailored exactly to my measurements. Straight-legged black slacks, a white button-up blouse, and a black dress jacket that fit me perfectly. It certainly wasn't meant to be sexy, but the way it hugged my stomach and hips did good things for my body. I felt satisfied with my reflection in the mirror, and after several minutes of thought, I pulled my hair into a neatly braided bun that showed off my Molniya marks. The skin was still irritated, but at least the bandage was gone. I looked very professional. I was actually kind of reminded of Sydney. She was an alchemist, a human who worked with Maroi and Dompierce to hide the existence of vampires from the world. With her proper sense of fashion, she always looked ready for a business meeting. I kept wanting to send her a briefcase for Christmas. If ever there was a time for me to show off, today was the day. After the trials and graduation, this was the next biggest step in becoming a Guardian. It was a luncheon that all new grads attended. Maroi, eligible for new Guardians, would also attend, hoping to scope out the candidates. Our scores from school and the trials would have been made public knowledge by now, and this was a chance for Maroi to meet us and put in bids for who they wanted to guard them. Naturally, most guests would be royal, but a few other important Maroi would also qualify. I really had no interest in showing off and hooking a posh family. Lissa was the only one I wanted to guard. Still, I had to make a good impression. I needed to make it clear that I was the one who should be with her. She and I walked over to the royal ballroom together. It was the only place large enough to hold us all, since more than just St. Vladimir's grads were in attendance. All the American schools had sent their new recruits, and for a moment, I found the sea of black and white dizzying. Bits of color, royals dressed up in their finest clothing, livened the palette up a little. Around us, soft watercolor murals made the walls seem to glow. Lissa hadn't worn a ball gown or anything, but she looked very elegant in a form-fitting teal dress made of raw silk. The royals mingled with the social ease they'd been raised with, but my classmates moved about uneasily. No one seemed to mind. It wasn't our job to seek out others. We would be approached. The grads all wore name tags, engraved metal ones. There were no "Hello, my name is" stickers here. The tags made us identifiable so that the royals could come and do their interrogations. I didn't expect anyone except my friends to talk to me, so Lissa and I headed straight for the buffet and then occupied a quiet corner to munch on our canapes and caviar. Well, Lissa ate caviar. It reminded me too much of Russia. Adrian, of course, sought us out first. I gave him a crooked grin. What are you doing here? I know you aren't eligible for a guardian. With no concrete plans for his future, it was assumed Adrian would simply live at court. As such, he'd need no outside protection, though he'd certainly qualify if he chose to strike out into the world.
True, but I could hardly miss a party, he said.
He held a glass of champagne in his hand
and I wondered if the effects of the ring Lyssa had given him were wearing off. Of course, the occasional drink really wasn't the end of the world, and the dating proposal's language had been loose in that area. It was mostly the smoking I wanted him to stay away from.
"Have you been approached by a dozen hopeful people?"
I shook my head.
Who wants reckless Rose Hathaway? The one who drops out without warning to do her own thing.
"Plenty," he said.
"I sure do. You kicked ass in the battle, and remember, everyone thinks you went off on some Strigoi killing spree. Some might think it's worth your crazy personality."
"He's right," a voice suddenly said. I looked up and saw Tasha Ozera standing near us, a small smile on her scarred face. In spite of the disfigurement, I thought she looked beautiful today, more royal than I'd ever seen her. Her long black hair gleamed, and she wore a navy skirt and lacy tank top. She even had on high heels and jewelry, something I was certain I'd never seen her wearing. I was happy to see her. I hadn't known she'd come to court. An odd thought occurred to me. Have they finally let you have a guardian? The royals had a lot of quiet, polite ways of shunning those who were in disgrace. In the Ozera's case, their guardian allotment had been cut in half as kind of a punishment for what Christian's parents had done. It was totally unfair. The Ozeras deserved the same rights as any other royal family. She nodded. I think they're hoping it'll shut me up about Maroi fighting with Dompierre's. Kind of a bribe.
One you won't fall for, I'm sure.
Nope. If anything, it'll just give me someone to practice with. Her smile faded, and she cast uncertain looks among us. I hope you won't be offended, but I put in a request for you, Rose. Lyssa and I exchanged startled glances.
Oh.
I didn't know what else to say. I hope they'll give you to Lyssa, Tasha added hastily, clearly uncomfortable. But the Queen seems pretty dead set on her own choices, if that's the case.
It's okay, I said. If I can't be with Lyssa, then I really would rather be with you.
It was the truth. I wanted Lyssa more than anyone else in the world, but if they kept us apart, then I'd absolutely prefer Tasha to some snobby royal. Of course, I was pretty sure my odds of getting assigned to her were as bad as those of getting assigned to Lyssa. Those who were angry at me for running off would go out of their way to put me in the most unpleasant situation possible. And even if she was being granted a guardian, I had a feeling Tasha's preferences wouldn't be high priority either. My future was still a big question mark.
Hey, exclaimed Adrian, offended that I hadn't named him as my second choice.
I shook my head at him.
You know they'd assign me to a woman anyway. Besides, you've got to do something with your life to earn a guardian.
I meant it jokingly, but a small frown made me think I might have actually hurt his feelings. Tasha, meanwhile, looked relieved. I'm glad you don't mind. In the meantime, I'll do what I can to help you two. She rolled her eyes. Not that my opinion counts for much. Sharing my misgivings about getting assigned to Tasha seemed pointless. Instead, I started to thank her for the offer, but we were then joined by yet another visitor, Daniela Ivajkov.
Adrian, she chastised gently, a small smile on her face. You can't keep Rose and Vasilisa all to yourself.
She turned to Lyssa and me.
The Queen would like to see you both.
Lovely.
We both stood up, but Adrian remained sitting, having no desire to visit his aunt. Tasha apparently didn't either. Seeing her, Daniela gave a curt, polite nod.
Lady Ozera?
She then walked away, assuming we'd follow. I found it ironic that Daniela seemed willing to accept me, but still had that typical aloof Ozera prejudice. I guess her niceness only went so far. Tasha, however, had long since grown immune to that sort of treatment.
Have fun, she said.
She looked over at Adrian. More champagne?
Lady Ozera, he said grandly. You and I are two minds with a single thought.
I hesitated before following Lyssa to Tatiana. I'd taken in Tasha's grand appearance, but only now really paid attention to something.
Is all your jewelry silver? I asked.
She absentmindedly touched the opal necklace around her neck. Her fingers were adorned with three rings.
Yes, she said, confused.
Why?
This is going to sound really weird. Well, maybe not compared to my normal weirdness,
But could we, borrow all of those? Lissa shot me a look and immediately guessed my motives. We needed more charms and were short on silver. Tasha arched an eyebrow, but like so many of my friends, she had a remarkable ability to roll with weird ideas. Sure, she said, but can I give them to you later? I don't really want to strip my jewelry in the middle of this party. No problem. I'll have them sent to your room. With that settled, Lissa and I walked over to where Tatiana was surrounded by admirers and those wanting to suck up. Daniela had to be mistaken in saying Tatiana wanted to see both of us. The memory of her yelling at me over Adrian still burned in my head, and dinner at the Ivashkovs hadn't fooled me into thinking the queen and I were suddenly best friends. Yet, astonishingly, when she caught sight of Lissa and me, she was all smiles.
Vasilisa and Rosemarie!
She beckoned us closer, and the group parted. I approached with Lissa, my steps tentative. Was I going to get yelled at in front of all these people? Apparently not. There were always new royals to meet, and Tatiana first introduced Lissa to all of them. Everyone was curious about the Dragomir princess. I was introduced as well, though the queen didn't go out of her way to sing my praises as she did Lissa's. Still, being acknowledged at all was incredible.
Vasilisa, said Tatiana, once the formalities were finished. I was thinking you should visit Lehi soon. Arrangements are being made for you to go in, oh, maybe a week and a half. We thought it would be a nice treat for your birthday. Serena and Grant will accompany you, naturally, and I'll send a few others.
Serena and Grant were the guardians who had replaced Dimitri and me as Lissa's future protection. Of course they'd be going with her. Then, Tatiana said the most startling thing of all.
And you can go too if you'd like, Rose. Vasilisa could hardly celebrate without you.
Lissa lit up. Lehi University. The lore that had made her accept a life at court. Lissa yearned for as much knowledge as she could get, and the queen had given her a chance at it. The prospect of a visit totally filled her with eagerness and excitement, especially if she could celebrate her 18th birthday there with me. It was enough to distract her from Victor and Christian, which was saying something.
Thank you, Your Majesty, that'd be great.
There was a strong possibility, I knew, that we might not be around for this scheduled visit, not if my plan for Victor worked. But I didn't want to ruin Lissa's happiness, and I could hardly mention it in this royal crowd. I was also kind of stunned that I'd been invited at all. After issuing the invite, the queen said nothing else to me and continued speaking with the others around her. Yet, she'd been pleasant, for her, at least, while addressing me, just as she had at the Ivashkov home. Not best friend nice, but certainly not raving bitch insane either. Maybe Daniela had been right. More pleasantries followed as everyone chatted and tried to impress the queen, and it soon became clear that I was no longer needed. Glancing around the room, I found someone I needed to talk to and meekly separated myself from the group, knowing Lissa could fend for herself. Eddie, I called, reaching the other side of the ballroom. Alone at last. Eddie Castile, a longtime friend of mine, grinned when he saw me. He too was a Dampier, tall with a long, narrow face that still had a cute boyish look to it. He had tamed his dark sandy blonde hair for a change. Lissa had once hoped Eddie and I would date, but he and I were strictly just friends. His best friend had been Mason, a sweet guy who'd been crazy about me and who had been murdered by Strigoi. After his death, Eddie and I had adopted protective attitudes toward each other. He'd later been kidnapped during the attack at St. Vladimir's, and his experiences had made him a serious and determined guardian, sometimes a little too serious. I wanted him to have more fun, and was delighted to see the happy glint in his hazel eyes now.
I think every royal in the room's been trying to bribe you, I teased.
It wasn't entirely a joke. I'd been keeping an eye on him throughout the party, and there'd always been someone with him. His record was stellar. Surviving the awful events in his life might have scarred him, but they reflected well on his skills. He had great grades and ratings from the trial. Most importantly, he didn't have my reckless reputation. He was a good catch.
Kind of seems that way, he laughed. I didn't really expect it.
You're so modest,
You're the hottest thing in this room.
Not compared to you.
Yeah, as shown by the people lining up to talk to me. Tasha O'Zara is the only one who wants